SS Scharfuhrer Josef Wulff entered a storeroom shortly after 5 p.m., lured there by the offer of a nice coat that the prisoners had taken off a transport. As one prisoner helped Wulff into the coat, two others quickly pulled out hatchets and drove them into Wulff's head, killing him. His body was carefully concealed beneath a pile of clothes, his blood mopped up and his pistol taken. Close by, 33-year-old Oberscharführer Rudolf Beckmann, the head of sorting commands in Camp 2, was enticed towards a storeroom to view a leather coat. But Beckmann suddenly changed his mind and strode off to his office instead. A little later, a combat team entered his office and stabbed him to death with knives. His body was left in a pool of blood on the floor behind his desk. Unterscharführer Walter Hochberg suddenly appeared in the SS garage and was killed there by the momentarily surprised Jewish prisoners. A major target was the commandant of Camp 2, Oberscharführer Göttinger. He was lured into the shoemaker's shop to try on some new jackboots. As he leaned over, he was struck in the head by a hatchet and killed. The NCO in charge of the Ukrainian Guards, 27-year-old Oberscharführer Siegfried Gretschus, entered the shoemaker's shop and was axed in the head by Soviet POW Arkady Weisspapir. Soon after, SS-man Ivan Klatt, one of the Travniki Guards, came into the shoemaker's shop looking for Gretschus, and he was similarly dispatched, his Mauser rifle being added to the pistols that the Jews had now procured from the dead SS. Jews also cut the camp's telephone and electricity cables to prevent the remaining SS from calling in reinforcements. Scharfuhrer Friedrich Gaustich was killed in the carpentry shop, while Unterscharfuhrer Ernst Stegelin was also dispatched without trouble. So far, everything was progressing perfectly to plan. The alarm had not been raised, and the SS were none the wiser. Around 5 p.m., the camp prisoners, most of whom had little idea that a revolt was underway, began to assemble on the Appellplatz, the area the Germans use for roll call parades. At 5:10 p.m., Sascha blew an SS whistle, used to summon the prisoners to attention. It was 20 minutes early, and the bemused prisoners turned and stared as Sascha stood to address them. "Our day has come," he shouted. "Most of the Germans are dead. Let's die with honour. Remember, if anyone survives, he must tell the world what has happened here." Shouting was then heard. A Ukrainian guard had discovered the bloody corpse of Oberscharführer Beckmann lying behind his desk. The guard ran out shouting, "A German is dead!" Sascha didn't hesitate and shouted, "Forward, comrades!" at the top of his voice. Someone behind him yelled, "Forward!" while several others screamed, "For the Fatherland!" or "For Stalin!" Although the Jews managed to kill a total of 11 SS men, plus a few of the Travnikis, Frenzel and the remaining SS quickly armed themselves with machine pistols and opened fire on the prisoners as they attempted to storm the wire. The prisoners fired back at the Travnikis manning the gates and guard towers, killing or wounding several, while hundreds flung themselves at the fences and began to clamber over. The assault on the arms store failed, machine gun fire barring the way. "Most of the people who were escaping turned in the direction of the main gate," said Sascha. "There, after they finished off the guards, under cover of fire from the rifles that a few of them had, they broke through the gate and hurried in the direction of the forest." "We rushed to the fence," said Philip Bialowitz. "We were shooting back as the men in the guard towers were shooting at us with machine guns." "We ran out of the workshop," recalled survivor Ada Lichmann. "All around were the bodies of the killed and wounded. Some of them were exchanging fire with the Ukrainians. Others were running towards the gate or through the fences." The SS opened a vigorous fire, shooting down people as they ran or climbed. Many were killed after getting over the wire when they stepped on landmines. In horrific scenes, hundreds of survivors, many wounded, charged for the forest with German bullets stitching the earth around them. "We ran through the exploded minefield holes," said Thomas Blatt, "and we were outside the camp. Now to make it to the woods ahead of us. It was so close, I fell several times, each time thinking I was hit. And each time I got up and ran further, 100 yards, 50 yards, 20 more yards, and the forest at last. Behind us, blood and ashes. In the greyness of the approaching evening, the tower's machine guns shot their last victims. Once in the forest and out of range of the guards, the survivors searched around desperately for friends and relatives before striking off in larger groups. These large groups eventually broke up into smaller and smaller groups as the pressure of searching for food and water took its toll. Sasha initially led a party of about 50 survivors. But on the 17th of October, he halted the group in the forest and selected several men. They were all armed with rifles taken from the Travnikis. Sasha only left one rifle with the main group, though the people protested at his decision to leave on what he said was a reconnaissance. They couldn't stop him, and he promised to come back for them. He never did. Sasha, as a soldier, probably realized that trying to feed and protect such a large group was foolhardy. So he took a hard core of armed men, and they struck out on their own, giving them a better chance of making it. Some Sobibor survivors never forgave Sasha for abandoning them in the forest in this way. An estimated 158 Jews were killed by the guards during the revolt or blown up by mines. The SS, Wehrmacht and Order Police murdered a further 107 during hunts for the escapees. Another 53 died from other causes before the end of the war. There were only 58 known survivors, 48 men and 10 women from Sobibor. After the revolt, the SS decided to close down killing operations at Sobibor. Camp 3 was disassembled and the remaining Sonderkommandos shot. Furious that the revolt could even have occurred, the SS took further revenge measures against the Jews that were under their control, culminating in the murders of 42,000 in Lublin district 3 weeks after the revolt in Operation Erntefest. The Germans had plans to use the remainder of Sobibor camp for other purposes, and although they based a small guards detachment of Travnikis at the site until March 1944, it never held any more prisoners. Jewish leader Leon Feldhendler hid in Lublin until the end of the German occupation in July 1944. He was shot dead in his flat on the 2nd of April 1945 in mysterious circumstances, possibly murdered by a rival Zionist group or the victim of a robbery gone wrong. Thomas Teufel Blatt was initially hidden by a Polish farmer after the escape, but was later shot and wounded by the same farmer. Blatt survived the war, moving to Israel and then the United States. He wrote the book Escape from Sobibor in 1983, seeing it turned into a successful film, and two further books on the camp. He lived in Santa Barbara, California. Sasha joined the Soviet partisans, sabotaging railway lines, cutting telephone wires, and conducting hit-and-run attacks on the Germans. Once the Red Army had occupied Poland, Sasha, like all the other Red Army soldiers who had been taken prisoner by the Nazis, was punished on Stalin's order. He was conscripted into a tough penal battalion and sent to the front. But Sasha's commanding officer was so shocked by Sasha's story of what happened at Sobibor that Sasha was sent to Moscow, where he spoke before a commission of inquiry. Promoted to captain, Sasha was decorated for gallantry and finally discharged after suffering a foot injury. The Soviets refused to allow him to testify before the Nuremberg trials, and in 1948 Sasha was arrested during a campaign against what were called disloyal Jews. Stalin's death in 1953 saved Sasha from further suffering and he was released. He worked in a small amateur musical theatre. Refused permission by the Soviet authorities to testify at the Eichmann trial in Jerusalem in 1960, Sasha died in 1990. Commandant Karl Reichsleitner was transferred to Trieste and Fiume in Italy, along with nearly all the Aktion Reinhard death camp personnel, where they formed a special SS unit, Sondertruppe A. Detailed to fight partisans and murder Jews, Reichsleitner was killed at the age of 37 by partisans on the 3rd of January 1944. Karl Frenzel held command responsibility for the deaths of 150,000 Jews, who were gassed, shot or died of a variety of other punishments during his tenure in charge of Camp 1 at Sobibor. Frenzel also personally murdered at least six Jews, according to witness testimonies, and had organized the SS response to the uprising. Frenzel had subsequently helped to dismantle the Camp 3, the extermination area, after the revolt was over. Transferred along with most Aktion Reinhardt operatives to the partisan fighting unit Sondertruppe R in northern Italy, he was taken prisoner by the US Army near Munich in 1945 and released soon after. He worked as a lighting stage technician in Frankfurt until arrested on the 22nd of March 1962. He was brought to trial in September 1965. On the 20th of December, Karl Frenzel was sentenced to life imprisonment. Released on a technicality in 1982, he was rearrested and retried, again being sentenced to life imprisonment. But the sentence was not imposed due to ill health. Incredibly, Frenzel was later interviewed by survivor Thomas Toivy Blatt about Sobibor, probably a unique occurrence in the history of the Holocaust. Frenzel lived out the rest of his life in a retirement home near Hanover, where he died peacefully on the 2nd of September 1996, aged 85.